Megha Majumdar's new novel, A Guardian and a Thief, unfolds over one taut week in a near-future Kolkata, reeling from climate danger and food shortages. Two families, strangers to each other, are pushed into collision. On one side is Ma, a young mother whose days are an anxious calculation of calories and safety and a plan to get her family out. When a theft upends those fragile plans, she embarks on a search for the culprit in a city where every resource is rationed and every kindness carries a cost. On the other side is Bumba, a small-time thief whose desperate attempts to provide for his loved ones escalate into choices he cannot undo. Megha Majumdar is the author of the New York Times bestselling novel A Burning, which was nominated for the National Book Award and many other honors. Her latest is A Guardian and a Thief, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Megha Majumdar. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe. I'm really excited to be here.
It's a delight to have you here. I will just say this book is relatively small, but my goodness, it has so much packed into it and packs such a punch itself. It's hard to believe, thinking back on it, that it was a rather slim volume because it is so propulsive and so filled with these really wrenching decisions and actions that are taken over the course of a week or so. Give us a sense of what brought you to telling this particular kind of story.
I grew up in a city, Kolkata, in India, which is one of the cities in the world most profoundly affected by climate change. So I was reading quite a bit about the future of my hometown, and it got me thinking about what the lived experience of climate crisis will be. And it led me into the world of this book where people who are decent and good people in times of comfort and abundance begin to make astonishing decisions in this time of scarcity. And I grew so interested in the moral dilemma here of what do we do when our love for our children, our love for our family comes into conflict with our moral center.
So these are really climate refugees, and this is a book that takes place or could take place not very far in our future.
You're right. I imagined the world of this book perhaps a few decades in the future, and it helped me to conjure a world where, let's say, people might need cooling garments. People might need electrolyte pills when they go out. Those who work all day in the sun, for example, those who work in fields or food delivery workers might agitate for the right to shade from the sun. I worked really hard to conjure a world where all of these things are real and true. And at the same time, I wanted these elements to bring us into something which feels timeless, which is the love of parents and guardians for their children.
So the book starts off with Ma having these the passports, the visas necessary to go to the United States. And then they go missing and presumed to be stolen. Why is that trip and the lead up to that trip so important to this family, of the idea of going elsewhere?
The family in A Guardian and a Thief that you're referring to, they are a middle-class family. They have plenty of resources, and the prize that they're looking forward to is the opportunity to move away. They are scheduled to move to Michigan, and they have to survive one last week in this city. And the question of surviving this week, it brings up all of these other matters of who deserves escape, who deserves rescue from this situation. What happens when those with fewer resources see that the city, which is a place of crisis for this other family, is in fact the place of rescue and freedom for them? So there are kind of two parallel migrations in this book.
There are indeed, and that's it is fascinating to look at it that way of how you present it. I in this particular case, you have a mother, you have their child, and then grandfather or father, and they're all looking to make that trip over to Michigan, where the husband is waiting for his family to come over, and he has gone over first to set up roots. The way you do it, and I think it's beautiful, of the way that character is heard is through phone conversations that are had, and that really tells us a lot of what's going on his side.
Yes, there are sections of the book which are phone conversations between the father in Michigan and the mother in Kolkata. And the really interesting thing about writing those phone conversations for me, and this is something that many readers have brought up to me, is the phone conversations are not always truthful. They contain falsehoods. They contain lies. And the question that I've gotten quite a bit is, why are they lying to each other? Shouldn't they be telling each other the truth? And in these phone conversations, I turned to my experience moving away from India and to the US, where I remembered early phone calls home to my parents, where when things were difficult, I didn't always share with them how difficult they were because they were so far away, they couldn't have done anything to help me. And offering assurance, I'm okay, everything is okay, things are fine, don't worry about me. That felt like a gift, that felt like a mode of love. So I'm very interested in the function of lies as gifts of love.
Right. And you get into a definition of lying and a white lie, but really something to put someone that you love at ease on both sides. Are things okay? Yes, things are fine. We're very much looking forward to it. Meanwhile, all hell is breaking loose at home, but you are trying to make it sound that you're going to be okay so that person doesn't have something else to worry about in their life.
Exactly. The book is concerned in many ways with the complexity of migration. Moving away from home, as anybody listening to this who now lives far away from home knows, moving away from home is never simple. It is never only an occasion of relief or joy or excitement or ambition. It can be all of these things, but it is also an experience of sorrow and worry. And I wanted to write about that very complicated feeling of being far away from home, far away from the people you love, in as truthful a way as I could.
Megha Majumdar is our guest. The name of the new novel is A Guardian and a Thief, and the book is published by Knopf. Let us talk about the thief for a moment in the sense of, I mean, obviously that has a negative connotation, especially when it is opposite a guardian. But we learn much more. There's much nuance to this character of the thief, and as you alluded to earlier, of what makes someone do what it is that they do. And so talk a little bit about Bumba and that character of the needs that this character has to just try to hold things together.
You're right. The title of the book, A Guardian and a Thief, I hope encourages a reader to think about who is the guardian and who is the thief. The young man from a village who is presented at first in perhaps a really simple way as the thief, he is from a village where he has made a great mistake, and he moves to the city to try and correct that mistake. He moves to try and help his parents and his younger brother out of the consequences of that mistake. And I wanted to write a character who is in many ways operating from a place of love. This is a person who cares deeply for his family, who wants to secure a better future for them, who wants to see them in a home which is dry and not assaulted by rain and flood. He wants to see them have enough food to eat. And this character is motivated by love for his family. But unfortunately, his love for his family clashes with the love that Ma has for her family. So it's really a story of these two people who are operating from decent places, and two people who believe themselves to be principled and ethical human beings, who find that their love gains manifestations which are vicious. And what do they then do with that?
It's also fascinating that there is hope that things will be different in the United States and when they get to Michigan. And while those conditions are different, one wonders, especially looking at where we are now, overall, how long that would be the case, even in Michigan.
You're right. The family in this book does look at Michigan as a place of hope and escape. And they have one member of the family, the father, who is already in Michigan. He's a researcher. And he is perhaps the only one who is aware that life in the United States isn't so simple or straightforward either. The effects of climate change will be felt here. There will be issues of water and agriculture and pests in this country as well. And so part of the question there is, will there be any safe haven left in the world? Will every place be troubled in different ways? And what will escape look like then? Who then will get to be safe?
One of the things, and people that I know who have read and adored this book have we've talked about that it just is, man, if you think you're having a bad week, I'm just every... just everything that can go wrong goes wrong, and it's unrelenting. And I'm curious as to what it was like to write that way, of thinking of all of the traps and the failures and the falls that you can take as you're trying to do a very specific task.
This might sound strange, but I think that there is something so thrilling about writing a book which feels relentless and fast-paced and maybe even entertaining, while at the same time putting forward a question that I think is important. So that pairing of intellectual seriousness and entertainment in the mode of a plot which moves quickly and where hopefully interesting things happen, that is fascinating to me. I love thinking about the construction of story and what it means to entertain somebody, to keep a reader in the emotional place where you want them to be, while encouraging them to ask the questions that you want them to ask. So that mix of thinking hard and hopefully having fun is really important to me.
And there's a determination for all parties involved here to get what they want, and I don't mean in a negative way or in a deceitful way, but that there is a determination to work. They know the deck is stacked against them, so they're going to work as hard as they can to make sure that they achieve what they want to achieve.
Absolutely. All the people here are so determined. They are determined to secure food for the children and their family. They are determined to escape in whatever way they can. They are determined to win this battle that they find themselves in. And there is hopefully some exhilaration in reading that determination. And there is also a place that opens up for the reader to think, what would I do? What would I do if everything went wrong in this way? What would I do if I had 1 week to survive in my city and all of these obstacles came my way?
Did you always know how things were going to work out?
I had some sense of how the book would end. It felt inevitable to me that this great battle between the two families would lead to the end that I ended up writing. But I have to say that my editor, an incredible editor at Knopf, called Jordan Pavlin, who publishes some of the best books that we are all reading right now, Jordan helped me see the ending in a completely new way, and she encouraged me to finesse the ending to hold more complexity than it did before. Close to the ending I wanted, didn't quite have it, and then with Jordan's help, I think I found it.
What is it like when you found it? When you realize, okay, this is exactly what I wanted to convey.
It felt incredibly, the word that comes to mind is I felt sad. I felt really sad knowing that this would be the end. I also felt strangely hopeful and uplifted because, well, I don't want to give away too much of the end, but in my mind, it is a very intriguing mix of sorrow and hope, and a chance to look at characters anew, a chance to see how a character isn't what we might have thought they are. And that place of surprise, that place of opening, feels like the perfect thing for an end to accomplish, to wrap things up, but also provide an opening for the reader to step in and think some more.
You said you were sad. Was there a sadness in just finishing the project and saying goodbye to these characters?
You're right that being with these characters There is a sense in which they become so real. There's a sense in which you feel that if you've left them mid-scene as you're writing, they are waiting for you to come back and carry them forward. There is that sense of leaving behind real people, but there is also such quiet satisfaction in coming to the end of a 6-year-long process. For me, this book took 6 years to write, and in those 6 years, so much changed. I became a parent, which was a huge change in my life. So you look back at the ways in which your life changed and your life enabled you to become the writer you needed to be in order to finally finish this book. And there is quite a bit of joy in that as well.
Were there sections that you wrote very quickly, or did it all go at a fairly solid pace?
There were definitely sections that I had very early on, which felt very stable, and I didn't need to revise them very much. There's a section where the grandfather reflects on his life. That was a section I had quite early on. There's a section about the scarcity of food and what it is like to go to the market and see that all the vendors you are familiar with are gone. That was another section I had very early on. But there were so many plot lines and elements of the story which I tried to make work and simply didn't work. So there are also many, many invisible failures and failed drafts hidden within the book. And I think that that is so important to mention, that behind every finished book, I think there is so much effort and so much failure and so much determination.
Again, yes, determination for these characters as well as for you. When you are thinking about 6 years, so the burning came as this was as you were working on this, you were going through that process as well. And that book becomes a great success. And so does that how does that interfere, not interfere with the process of writing the often fraught second novel.
A Burning came out, you're right, when I was several months into the writing of A Guardian and a Thief. And I found it immensely helpful to feel that my heart and mind were already in a new project. I was excited about making something completely different, because it provided a very helpful degree of separation from the fate of A Burning. You know, when you finish a book and you publish it, you don't really know how readers will meet it. You don't know if readers will respond to it, if they will like it, if it will get any attention at all. You don't know if anybody will pick it up. So there is a lot of anxiety in that process of putting out a book, and a great deal of vulnerability. You're saying, this is what has been on my mind for years, and I am now sharing it with you. What do you think? It helped me to be in the middle of a new project and feel that I was already excited about making something new. And I have to say that A Burning found its readers in this astonishing way. Now that I'm doing events for A Guardian and a Thief, so many people come up to me in the book signing line and they say, I'm here because I loved A Burning. And that is so meaningful to hear. So, in some ways, I feel like I was able to write and publish A Guardian and a Thief because of what A Burning did.
And as for this book, Oprah doesn't hurt, right?
That was one of the most surreal moments of my life was getting the phone call from Oprah saying that she was picking the book for her book club.
And obviously nothing you expect, nothing you think, nothing you, it just happens and then you're along for the ride.
Absolutely. I mean, as I was saying, you write a book in complete solitude. It is just your thoughts, your questions. You are propelled forward by your conviction in this book. So you really don't know if anybody else will connect with it. And it was a complete surprise. It was a day in May, so several months ago, when my editor Jordan set up a call with me, and I thought that, she wanted to discuss some aspect of the book. And she called and she said, "Oh, my phone is not working so well. Let me call you back from another phone." And she did that so that I would pick up a call from an unknown number. And 5 minutes later, I got a call. I picked it up. I said, "Hi, Jordan." And the person on the other end of the line said, "This is Oprah." And I spent so much of that call thinking that somebody was pulling my leg because you do not expect a call from Oprah. I certainly did not. It was beyond the realm of anything that I thought was possible. And I am so grateful to Oprah and everybody who works at Oprah's book club, not only for lifting up this book, but for the care and generosity that they put into lifting up every single book club pick.
The new novel is A Guardian and a Thief. It is published by Knopf. Megan Majumdar, I thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Be well. Again, Megan Majumdar is the author of the new novel, A Guardian and a Thief. It is published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.